Well, thanks for choosing GoldSeek.com Radio as a trusted business information source. Today's special guest, David Morgan, the Silver Investor. Gold closed at a four-week high last week on geopolitical concerns, particularly in the Ukraine area. It's precious metals back on the radar screen, recapturing investors' attention. Who better to have on the show than the Silver Investor? David Morgan writes the Morgan Report, runs silverinvestor.com, will soon be republishing his book. Welcome, David Morgan.
Well, thank you, Chris. Great to be with you.
David, we're going to get more into this interesting book of yours at the end of the show, but I just kind of wanted to put that teaser out there, give people an idea. Any publishing dates come to mind in the next 6 months, 12 months?
It's called the deadline, and those are important. And of course, we've never missed a deadline on the Morgan Report ever. I'm shooting to have a rough draft for the Money Show, which is in a couple of weeks, and that'll just be like a rough edit. It's like my third revision. But I really want to have it, you know, neat, tidy, and ready, you know, published by the Silver Summit this year, which is October, I think, 23rd, 2014. So say, you know, middle of October or so, we should have it done. So it's going to be a big, powerful, all-inclusive book this time, much more in-depth than Get the Skinny on Silver Investing, which the publisher had certain rules, you know, 100 pages, no graphs, no charts, all that. This we're self-publishing. And it'll have a lot in it, not only about the silver market, but basically the background, the why and the wherefores and the reasons behind the financial crisis or currency crisis that I and others have so long forecast. So that's a bit of a teaser as well, but I know you have a lot of questions to start with, so we should probably move on to those.
Well, I'm sure the gold and silver crowd will devour this upcoming edition with relish. We will give more juicy details out to the listeners at the end of the show. Let's get into gold and silver. Gold still up about 5-6% for the year. Fantastic. Doing great. Silver still treading water near the break-even level. Not so bad when you consider the volatility factor there. Why don't you tell folks about this disconnect we've seen recently? Maybe some gold premium with the geopolitical concerns in the Middle East, Ukraine, and of course the Argentina currency drama. I'm sure that's a big factor.
I think you touched on it, Chris. Basically, gold is much more mainstream, even though, you know, certainly not a Wall Street darling by any stretch of the imagination, but gold is almost presentable to most investors. I mean, it's known as a crisis hedge, as a safe haven, and those are respectable terms around the gold market. Silver is sort of the poor cousin of gold. Certainly, it is a safe haven. It does have a monetary status, but it also has an industrial quality. I'll never, you know, say anything different than that. So gold is more likely to move on geopolitical upheavals, et cetera, as you stated. And I think that's why you're seeing more strength in the gold market, not the silver market. The deal with silver is it's such a small market that it tends to move both directions faster than gold. So gold starts to get some real momentum here because of, let's call it, safe haven status or a risk-on trade. Silver will rapidly, that'll spill over to the silver market, and because it's cheaper and it's a market that, that especially fund managers, a lot of people like to move into rapidly. So it could all of a sudden outperform gold quite easily. So my take is what you said. We're going to see more and more gold money move into gold kind of slowly, hesitantly. I mean, really, if you think about it fundamentally, there should be a pretty big move into gold right now with all that's going on geopolitically. But right now, there isn't relative to what the price action is. As far as what the physical movements are, they're hard to get an absolute accurate analysis on. Chris Jansen probably does as good as anybody. There's several analysts that do a good job. Obviously, tons of gold are moving into Asia. That's unabated, although you have seen a couple of recent months come out where, you know, the gold trade is off, meaning substantially less imports for a month. I don't think a day makes a market, and I don't think a month makes a market. Overall, the move from gold from west to east continues. Regardless, I think it's going to take a gold move before you see silver. So that's my take on it right now. You know, August is historically the bottom month for gold. I just did an update for our members. There's a seasonality trade, actually in silver, that works about 80-85% of the time, August 15th through about March of the following year. just going along with the silver market. But I looked at gold this time, and I just, again, did the video for our members, and I do these videos for the Basic Plus service. And gold, from the 6th, which we're behind that by, what, about a week, I guess, from the 6th of August up to about February of the following year, so February 2015, has about an 80-85% probability of making new money as well. And that trade I actually established on the 6th is already up, you know, a fair amount, enough to count your money. So I went ahead and for trading purposes, education purposes, said, okay, I'm going to go long at the market today, and it stopped just under the $1,300 level. So I'm going about a long way, winded way of saying that I really think the bottom is here, but I know there's a lot of others out there in my peer group that thinks that there's going to be another washout, or, you know, we're going to get clobbered, or traders are showing this or that, and that type of thing. So you probably want to ask me something about that. I'm guessing, but that may be the case.
And I think there is a lot of pessimism. That's another big plus. When you talk about the propensity for silver to outperform gold, there's no better recent illustration than the 2010-2011 period, from, let's say, $15-$16 to nearly $50. We're talking a threefold, okay, 200%, but threefold. So let's say you had $10,000. At the peak, you had $30,000. We don't see that type of action in gold. Now, that's not to say we won't. Silver, if you'll recall, was one of the most boring markets for almost 2 years, from 2009 to 2010. People had just given up. Gold just kept running from 2008, 2009. It looked like it was going, never going to stop. And silver just sat there. I mean, it was one of the oddest disconnects. And, you know, we're starting to see a disconnect like that now. People are sick of it. They don't want to hear about it. Think of the discount from $50 to $20. I mean, talk about a relative contrarian value.
Absolutely, Chris. I want to go back and say, you know, on that big run, you know, I established this intermediate level service I have called Basic Plus, and at the $19 level, I said, if it broke through, I'm going long. And I rode that to 26, got out and got right back in, rode all the way to 48 and got out within about 3 or 4 days to the top. So I actually had a couple people that are in the field, so to speak. One is, I won't even say anymore because I don't want people guessing who it was, but this guy retired. I mean, that one trade. Now, I'm not suggesting anyone trade futures. In fact, I actually suggest most people stay as far away from it as they possibly can. But what it does illustrate that if you know what you're doing, you want to put on a position trade and ride it all the way up, it can make up for a lot of mistakes. That was something that we did. You know, I wish I could say we do that every year or on and on. But what I can say is that was established as a remarkable move, as you said, as backing you up. And, you know, I was really concerned with everyone, public and private, meaning people that are members of the website and anyone out there that's involved in the silver market, because there was so much enthusiasm. And anything around a 35 level on up, I was highly suggesting in the public domain to, you know, be careful. If you have to buy silver, don't buy it all, you know, just buy some and that type of thing. Yet, you know, I just got a letter, an email recently about, you know, I'm sick of this. I bought all my silver at 40. Now I understand everything there is to know about silver. It's never, ever going to go above 20. And, you know, prove to me why I'm wrong, Mr. Expert, you know. And I actually did send him a private message, and I did say, basically I said, read my book, but I gave him some other tidbits. And, you know, not that I am the end all be all in the silver market. I certainly have put my time and dues into this market, continue to do so. And I use the silver guru moniker as kind of a tongue in cheek thing, as something to remember me by. And I just picked it as a name I could get people to, you know, come to the Hotmail account. When I started, I didn't even have a website. I just had the Hotmail address. But anyway, back on point, it will do that again. And people, there'll be more silver purchase, Chris, above $35 an ounce than there was between this $20 and $35 level. People will not buy bottoms. And it really drives me crazy. I try to find out and ask myself, what can I do differently? What can I say differently? What can I publish? What can, you know, and it's crazy because you look at, you know, people that, let's say, I'll just say it as I see it. They complain. And they complain about, you know, why this or that happens and why the rich get richer and that kind of thing. And it's funny because you look at who bought silver at a bottom. It was Warren Buffett, bought it at the all-time inflation-adjusted low. George Soros, who I'm no big fan of, but he had a major interest in Apex Silver Mines, which is now defunct. And Bill Gates bought a rather substantial position. For him, it was probably just a little drop in the bucket. And he was using one of Pauly's several fund managers that he associates with to put a nice big fat chunk into Pan American Silver. So the billionaires, not the millionaires, the billionaires are buying silver at the bottom. Well, this, as far as I'm concerned, is another bottom. Now, it could go lower, could get a spike low, we could see, you know, something breached, I'll go on. I'll say, I won't give the name, but talk to a PhD, very bright guy, I had about a two-hour conversation with him, and you got to keep my interest for me to talk to anybody that long. But he'd done some algorithms, and he's pretty convinced that there's going to be a spike low in silver, gold's going to kind of hold, and the ratio is going to get back to 80 to 1. For the record, I doubt it. But I'm not going to say he's wrong. I'm way too smart, way too seasoned, and the silver market can surprise even me to say that's not, you know, not going to happen. I don't think it will. I really don't. I think the probability of that is probably less than 15%. So for the record, that's where I'm standing. Will it happen? I doubt it. Is it impossible to happen? No. Probability is very low. However, if that were to happen, if you had any guts, and it takes guts in the silver market, you certainly want to load the boat, because those type of spike lows, and I've seen them over and over again. In fact, I wrote an article in Futures Magazine called Spiked, and it was all about these spike lows in the silver market. That's when you want to get on. Problem is, most people can't, because it's a one-day or hourly event. Unless you're sitting there at your computer watching it, the chance of getting in are almost impossible. So you'll see a spike low, and then it'll come up and close much higher that same day. But anyway, I think I said enough on the topic. The best thing for most people is take a long-term view. Don't try to buy the bottom. Don't look for the spike low. Just keep buying at a certain range, and certainly a good range right now. You know, once you get, if you accumulated what you want, say 10% of your overall portfolio by the time, you know, such and such a time, or by the time silver's under 25, I think if you've got a 2, 3, 4 year time horizon, you're going to be very happy you did such.
I think it's an excellent strategy. You know, this idea that you have to catch the absolute bottom, that's the most expensive trade you'll ever make. You know, the tops and the bottom, more money's lost, I think, at those points than anywhere else. And I thought it was interesting that you say that investors simply can't buy bottoms. You know, you'd think that's where the interest would come in, but they lose enthusiasm. It really requires the bull trend, I think, to pull in people where the excitement starts to build in these markets. My guess is you're keeping an eye on, well, there's several factors going on. I mean, other than geopolitical, is there anything else that you'd like to hone in on here?
Looking at, you know, the new uses of silver, which always continue, and one of them is the solid-state lighting. So this is going to be a chapter in the book, not just solid-state lighting. The chapter will be about new uses in silver and where we see the future of silver on the industrial side. And there's also silver batteries, which, you know, this is not really a forecast, but something to pay attention to. And this is, you know, the electric car. I think the electric car is here to stay. A good friend of Mike Maloney's, as you probably know, and we have the fun of driving Mike's Tesla. Last time I was visiting him in Los Angeles, and those things accelerate. Wow. But my point is, these lithium-ion batteries that Tesla's manufacturing and others for these electric cars, you know, there is a silver substitute. And I think at some point you may see silver lead or silver zinc or silver something battery that may be better than a lithium-ion, as far as better meaning, you know, longer range, more capacity, that type of thing. As far as weight, I'm not too sure. It'd probably be heavier, but not necessarily, you know, for the amount of juice getting out. Nothing conducts electricity as well as silver. And, of course, all of it's recyclable. In other words, the lithium ions are recyclable batteries, and silver would obviously be recyclable as well. So there's a lot of potential uses for silver that aren't, you know, right in your face at this point in time, but they're out there kind of lurking around, if you will. And some of them are very significant, such as what I mentioned, although may never come to fruition, it's possible it could. So we address that in the chapter. And of course, the other things we're looking at is what investor sentiment is. And sentiment is what we spent most of the show on. You know, when no one wants it, that's when you want it. When everybody wants it, that's when you don't want it. And that's going to be, I think, the hardest thing for me is 3 or 4 years from now, 2016 or 17, that's my current forecast, when everybody and his brother's calling me and saying, you know, I want to get your subscription. Dealer has silver. I can't find it here in Ohio. I can't find it in Florida. And, you know, that type of thing. And it's like, I don't look at it. Is it overvalued or not? Even silver can be overvalued. And it's not how many paper dollars silver's worth. It's how much does silver buy relative to other commodities. It's really the way to look at it. And when it's overvalued, I'm going to say, you know what? It's overvalued. I'm not afraid to pull the gun. In fact, one of the chapters in the book is about how to exit the market. We've had, I think it's like 5 or 6 strategies on how to exit the market. And, you know, investing is really about buying right. Selling isn't really an issue if you buy right. Of course, a lot of people will hold too far because they think it's going to go to the moon, and nothing, even the silver market, doesn't go to the moon.
David Morgan, I know there's listeners scratching their heads saying, the silver investor is better connected than I am, has been in this industry for decades. Give us some sentiment indications. Let's say the silver ETF ownership and holdings. Interest level's very low there. What else are you looking at to kind of give you a gauge, a metric, to know that people have just tossed in the towel?
I'd say ETFs is a good place because these are the big purchasers. If you look at, you know, the real silver bulls for the last decade or so, you look at the Sprott Physical Silver Trust, you look at Central Fund of Canada, you look at Zurich Continental Bank, you look at the SLV, you will find that there's no new purchases there. And there's several reasons for it. So the main reason is low prices. Now, that contradicts what I just said. Most of these guys are savvy enough to buy low. The problem is these are funds, and for them to buy low, they have to have a premium in the fund. And for most of them, there isn't enough of a premium to go ahead and float an offering to get enough money to go out and buy physical silver. So for them, it's sort of a catch-22. So that's one of those things that I'm looking at. We just get up off the bottom here. I think that you may see one come, and it's a little bit of a copycat industry, meaning that if you see one of those major funds or holding companies come in and make a substantial silver purchase, I wouldn't be surprised to see a couple more come in shortly thereafter, meaning within 2, 3, 4 months, and also make it. And if there were substantial purchases, like we've seen in the past, you know, 20 million ounces here, 30 million ounces there, that type of thing, all of a sudden you might see a little bit more momentum in the silver market. And there's a shelf filing on most of these things. So these shelf filings are already filed with the SEC that basically says anytime they want to float an offering, it will. They'll put it out in the public domain, and you'll know about it about as quick as me. And then if I get whispered the number, let's say I have a call with John Emery, which I talk to John on a fairly regular basis, you know, I'm not allowed at law to tell even my members early. You know, I have to wait for it to be public information. So that's something that I can't really do. But no, I look more, sentiment to me kind of goes with the market. I'm not a pure technician nor a pure fundamentalist. But if all of a sudden you start to see a lot of money moving in the silver market for no apparent reason, usually that means somebody knows something that perhaps even I don't. And if I saw that, obviously I'd get on the phone and I'd start calling calls, and I might find out. In fact, in most cases, probably 80% of the time I would. But again, it was like Zurich Continental Bank and Eric Mayer over there was buying. He might even tell me, but I'm not allowed to say that until it becomes public domain knowledge. So that would be a situation that, you know, by being a member, you really wouldn't have a super advantage on.
Fundamentals obviously haven't really changed much, have they, over the past decade? I mean, sure, we had a sell-off from 2011 through 2013. But if gold went to a new nominal high in 2011, why is it that silver didn't run to a new nominal high? And should we be discouraged by that fact, or should we be now encouraged by it, that it is inevitable, could represent, at least on a inflation-adjusted level, an interesting target to shoot for in the years to come?
First of all, the last decade, fundamentally, silver was about 35% of the market was for industrial use 10 years ago. Now it's about 55%. So industrial usage over the last decade has actually increased significantly. And again, we go into that in the book. Secondly, one of the things that's really important for people to know, and it seems to be misread by many silver aficionados, and that is that the production of silver increased during that same 10-year time frame. And it's like any commodity or anything in the market that's wanted badly. There's something that's wanted, there, and the price is going to be profitable. There's going to be that demand that's going to drive up the supply. So the supply of silver rose significantly in the same 10-year time frame. Why didn't it make a nominal new high? Well, there's no one knows the answer to that, really. We did get to the nominal, you know, 50-ish level. But again, that's a nominal price. 50 today certainly is not much less valuable than 50 back in 1980. However, I think it has to do a lot with what goes on in this market, how much momentum there was. I mean, they put five margin upgrades or increases in margin, I should say, while it was going up. The market was going parabolic. There's a lot of reasons on both arguments on why it was done. So there was lots of, let's say, impetus to keep the market around that level or lower. And, of course, it was successful. So I don't look at it as, and I got that question very much at that time frame. But it's over when it's over, and it's not over. In fact, I'll be speaking in about a week at the Money Show in San Francisco, and the title of my speech will be Precious Metals, the Next 3 Years. Yeah, I'm not a big Elliott Wave guy, but I've studied markets my whole life, and basically there's three moves up for any major market, and we've had two, and we've got one to go. And the last one is usually the one, the big one, the one that people, like, if you're old enough to remember what Intel stock looked like in its heyday. I mean, it just keeps going up and up and up, and no one wants to get off. And this is what's going to happen, in my view, in the precious metals. But I'm not looking for that kind of move until 2016. But when it happens, there'll be more and more and more people coming in. But then there'll be that last buyer, and there will be no one to sell to. Like all markets, like the technology boom, like the real estate bubble. And I think it'll be the bubble of all bubbles. I think it'll be compounded because of the synergistic effect. I think you're going to see the metals being held strongly in strong hands and added to by weaker hands coming in the market. And at the same time, you're going to be having a semi or total debt crisis. So as people want out of the bond markets, and this is across the board, not only government bonds, but municipal bonds, junk bonds, corporate bonds. There's going to be a lot of worry about what debt's good and what debt isn't. And they'll be seeking safe haven status. And that means gold primarily, but silver will be the spillover market. It's so tiny and silver is priced less than gold. It'll push silver to new highs in real terms. So that's what I'm looking for, Chris. I'm not that concerned about it. You know, I said it would happen in my lifetime. It's still going to be a bit of a grind here. You know, it's going to be... it's not going to be happy days are here again, in my view, until sometime probably the latter part of 2015. But you can make a lot of money being a prudent fundamental investor at this point in time while we're doing your show, averaging in now, and just having a long-range view, meaning a long-range nowadays is, you know, 3 to 5 years. So, again, I think this is the time. Nobody wants it. You should want it.
I think it's well said. And, you know, where are the alternatives? I was, you know, talking to Bill Murphy last week and other guests recently. I mean, the way that the interest rates are set up, retirees, young folks, we're all in the same boat together, aren't we? I mean, there's just nowhere to hide. You can't beat inflation with almost any investment today. You know, you have this opportunity to get at gold and particularly silver, vastly discounted prices, and you can't park your wealth capital almost anywhere else to compensate for inflation better than precious metals. I think you've done a good job outlining some of the highlights that we should expect. Maybe you'd like to tell folks more about the Morgan Report.
If you want free information, you can go to our website, themorganreport.com. There's a free e-letter that comes out every Saturday. You can get that for free. If you're more inclined to get money, metals, and mining, over on the right-hand side, subscribe to our 3 levels of service. Also, for freebies, there is a YouTube channel called Silver Guru and a Twitter feed at Silver Guru.
You did kind of allude to 2016. I wonder if you could just add a few details here, give us an idea of what's so special, according to your work, about this time frame. I mean, is this political? Is this the changing of the guard? Or is there something else that you're seeing? Is it cyclical? Do you see a cycle top coming in when you add in the Elliott Wave analysis?
It's partly the Elliott Wave. Again, I'm not a big fan of the Elliott Wave theory, but no, it's more or less educated guess, knowing how markets move. This last leg up, once it gets going, it goes parabolic and stays there for probably months. And if you take a look at what the NASDAQ did, you get a pretty good idea of what to expect in the metals, or even the housing index during the rise up into 2007. Again, you'll get a pretty good idea of what to expect. The commodity cycle is usually a 17-year cycle average. So if you take 2000 for gold and add 17, you come out with 2017. A friend of mine wrote a book that got out on an award called Polar Perspectives. And in that book, I think his date was in 2017. I didn't go along, you know, I'm saying that he agrees with me or I agree with him, but that's my best wag right now. And I'll just call it a wag. But normally when you get the spike high that we got, from the 1948 we discussed on your show, it usually takes at least 2 years, usually three, to consolidate. We've been a little longer than 3 years. Consolidation should be nearing an end. And then it takes a good year or so to come back up into the range where it was getting frothy, which, pick a number, 35, 40, I don't know. So looking a year out, we'll put you in 2015 in the summer. Maybe it'll be in the 40 range. Maybe in the 50. And of course, I have to put in a caveat I always do, Chris, which is that, you know, barring some huge geopolitical event, which could send the metals up, you know, instantly overnight, but barring that taking place, that's what I expect.
All right, David Morgan, we're going to look forward to having you back on GoldSeek.com radio.
Well, thank you, Chris.